So? No, of course. Drumknot, do give Mr. Lipfig his keys. The clerk stepped forward, handed Moist a huge, rusted key ring full of keys, and proffered a clipboard. Sign here, please, Postmaster General, he said. Hold on a minute, Moist thought. This is only one city. It's got gates. It's completely surrounded by different directions to run. Does it matter what I sign? Certainly, he said, and scribbled his name. Your correct name, if you please, said Lord Vetinari, not looking up from his desk. What name did he sign, Drumknot? The clerk craned his head.
Ethel Stake, my lord, as far as I can make out.
Do try to concentrate, Mr. Lipvig, said Vetinari wearily, still apparently reading the paperwork. Moist signed again. After all, what would it matter in the long run? And it would certainly be a long run if he couldn't find a horse. And that only leaves the matter of your parole, officer, said Lord Vetinari, still engrossed in the paper before him.
Parole officer?
Yes. I'm not completely stupid, Mr. Lipvig. He will meet you outside the post office building in 10 minutes. Good day.
When Moist had left, Drumknot coughed politely and said,
Do you think he'll turn up there, my lord?
One must always consider the psychology of the individual, said Vetinari, correcting the spelling on an official report. That is what I do all the time, and lamentably, Drumknot, you do not always do. That is why he has walked off with your pencil.
Always move fast. You never know what's catching you up. 10 minutes later, Moist von Lipvig was well outside the city. He'd bought a horse, which was a bit embarrassing, but speed had been of the essence, and he'd only had time to grab one of his emergency stashes from its secret hiding place and pick up a skinny old screw from the bargain box in Hobson's livery stable. At least it had been no irate citizen going to the watch. No one had bothered him. No one looked at him twice. No one ever did. The city gates had indeed been wide open. The plains lay ahead of him, full of opportunity. And he was good at parlaying nothing into something. For example, at the first little town he came to, he'd go to work on this old nag with a few simple techniques and ingredients that'd make it worth twice the price he paid for it, at least for about 20 minutes or until it rained. 20 minutes would be enough time to sell it and, with any luck, pick up a better horse worth slightly more than the asking price. He'd do it again at the next town, and in 3 days, maybe four, he'd have a horse worth owning. But that would be just a sideshow, something to keep his hand in. He'd got 3 very nearly diamond rings sewn into the lining of his coat, a real one in a secret pocket in the sleeve, and a very nearly gold dollar sewn cunningly into the collar. These were, to him, what his saw and hammer are to a carpenter. They were primitive tools, but they'd put him back in the game. There is a saying, "You can't fool an honest man," which is much quoted by people who make a profitable living by fooling honest men. Moist never tried it, knowingly, anyway. If you did fool an honest man, he tended to complain to the local watch, and these days they were harder to buy off. Fooling dishonest men was a lot safer, and somehow more sporting. And of course, there were so many more of them. You hardly had to aim. Half an hour after arriving in the town of Hapley, where the big city was a tower of smoke on the horizon, he was sitting outside an inn, downcast, with nothing in the world but a genuine diamond ring worth $100 and a pressing need to get home to Genua, where his poor, aged mother was dying of gnats. 11 minutes later, he was standing patiently outside a jeweller's shop, inside which the jeweller was telling a sympathetic citizen that the ring the stranger was prepared to sell for $20 was worth $75. Even jewellers have to make a living. And 35 minutes later, he was riding out on a better horse with $5 in his pocket, leaving behind a gloating, sympathetic citizen who, despite having been bright enough to watch Moist's hands carefully, was about to go back to the jeweller to try to sell for $75 a shiny brass ring with a glass stone that was worth 50 pence of anybody's money. The world was blessedly free of honest men and wonderfully full of people who believed they could tell the difference between an honest man and a crook. He tapped his jacket pocket. The jailers had taken the map off him, of course, probably while he was busy being a dead man. It was a good map, and in studying it, Mr. Wilkinson and his chums would learn a lot about decryption, geography, and devious cartography. They wouldn't find in it the whereabouts of 150,000 Ankh-Morpork dollars in mixed currencies, though, because the map was a complete and complex fiction. However, Moist entertained a wonderful, warm feeling inside to think that they would, for some time, possess that greatest of all treasures,